It's not very English of you, sir.
It's most certainly not. No, Aikman was it's fun, it's interesting, you know, you listen to that, you get into reading Aikman and it's like, man, this stuff is English as hell. Like, I don't know if we stressed that as much as we could have in the main episode, which is fine. It feels super English, which is cool. It's an interesting perspective, like Hagulian was saying. It's an interesting perspective on English society, particularly the 50s and 60s and all that. So it was pretty interesting reading through. I read, you know, about half of his short stories, a little more than that. So a pretty good selection. By the way,
the description of the stories, if I may, is just so evocative. You're immediately kind of impressed by, I wonder who he influenced on the sly. He's not a household name, at least not in the States.
Let me read just a little thing.
Oh, here. That was what felt like it was missing from the main. Yeah, we could have used a little more of that. That's okay though, no worries. So that's why you're on the Patreon. That's
right.
Why you're here.
That's mm-hmm. right. So I'm gonna give you a little bit of all right. It's tricky. I didn't have one in mind exactly, but let me just this is from Wood. Okay, so in the story Wood, there's this bachelor who lives in this sort of bachelor town. It's kind of incidentally that way, and he makes a friend who's an old bachelor, and this guy gets married to a very strange woman, and then years down the road, our main character happens to be in the town that he knows that they moved to, and decides to pay them a visit. Now, the whole story starts out, you know, those cuckoo clocks. I don't know if it's even called a cuckoo clock, but it's a clock where like the little guy comes out on the carousel and like,
clocks? I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me look it up. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it starts out with the description of that. And then you go through these different things. You meet this very strange family, the bachelor that gets married off. He's preoccupied with making these little like dolls made out of like twine as his favorite thing to do. And same, anyway, he marries off this sort of strange girl and we go to visit them later. And he's, I'm going to pick it up where he starts describing this house. It was hard to believe that it had been necessary to pay money for the plot on which the house stood. The tiny black structure recalled what one had heard of squatters and their rights. It stood on a sandy, scrubby, nondescript waste, like a thrown-away cabin trunk, or perhaps like a house built by the little people, there one day, gone the next. I am sure I should have known at once that it was the house built by Munn's father-in-law for his chicks with his own hands, but as it happened, Vi, that's the woman he married, in her bright colors, was at work in the front garden as my open roadster snorted laboriously up the ridge. At the same time, the rain began to fall once more, this time heavily. I saw Vi go back into the little house, from the other side of which Munn emerged, already clad in heavy oilskins. So they are the clock. They've become the living version of this clock. I suppose it was natural enough for the frail female to withdraw from the inclement weather and for the stouter male to take her place, but there seemed to be something odd and automatic about it, all the same. Moreover, on the instant, two flaps opened up in the house's single black gable and a quite life-size wooden cuckoo jumped out, shouting its head off 4 times. I looked at my watch. It was indeed 4 o'clock. It seemed odd to have a clock outside a tiny private house as if it were a town hall, but there could be no doubt about the hour of day being audible over a wide area. By this time, Munn had looked up and seen me seated there, grinding slowly uphill. To speak plainly, I doubt whether if I had been traveling faster, I should have stopped, though this may make me sound a cad. With Munn's gaze upon me, I had no alternative. Also, I should have to raise the hood, always a lengthy and injurious undertaking. I brought the motor to a standstill. Mun just stood there staring at me, silent and motionless. His clothes had never appeared particularly to fit, as I believe I've indicated, but the oilskins seemed to belong to another and much larger man altogether. Mun held a hoe with a very long handle, but it was hard to see what he was doing with it or what Vi had been doing before him. I have spoken of a front garden, but when I stopped the car, I realized that there was nothing, no cultivation of any kind, but only the sparse and stony heath, no different in front of the house from elsewhere. "Excuse me," I shouted. "I must put up my hood." He means put up the roof of his convertible. By now, the rain was bucketing down, what people call a cloudburst, though no one knows exactly what that is. Raising the hood was always a fearful ploy, but I dashed at it and did better than usual under the continued pressures of the situation. All the same, the job took me a minute or two, so that it became rather noticeable that Mun was not offering to help. When I had adjusted the last screw, car hoods were more elaborately devised in early days. He's always mentioning the early days. It used to be like this. It used to be like that. Every story has it in it. When I adjusted the last screw, I realized that Mun was no longer here at all. Obviously, instead of coming to my aid, he had returned to the house for shelter. I think I should have almost certainly have proceeded therewith upon my way, though no doubt with qualms. But what happened was that the car refused to start, which was all too customary. I sat there for some time with the downpour beating on the hood. I dare say I fiddled around a bit with the levers and buttons and so forth, but I had little hope in that direction. And it goes on for a little while, and he eventually goes into the house, and it's empty. He can't find them. It's just very strange. And then it ends. It's very...
Yeah, this eerie, uncanny... Yeah, Julian kept talking about in English culture and the sort of attitudes at the time, and I'm sure we could spend an awful lot of time talking to him and to... And to English folk about these little nuances, but there's an uncanniness to it that's very real. And Lynchian is the word that I get.
Lynchian, yeah. I think, is accurate. And every story starts that way. It's and that makes it sound like they're all the same. But it starts out, like one, for instance, is this story called No Time Had Passed. Very normal guy working a white-collar job. He comes home, and they've been living in this house not for like a full year. It might have been very early. They moved in the winter, and now it was summer. And he goes out in the backyard, and he's like, "There's a little river here. Well, that's weird, right?" And then he goes down some steps, and there's a little boat there. That's very odd, right? And then there's somebody across the river beckoning him over, and he takes the boat over, and he goes in, and he ends up having this. I'm not going to spoil it, but he ends up having this incredibly weird experience with this guy who's like a celebrity of some kind, who lures him into this little hut that's way bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. And he has a little sphinx in a cage. Very weird stuff. And then he gives him this little concoction to drink. And then when he goes home, no time has passed except his house has been destroyed now. It's very, and it doesn't leave you any...
Sounds like a folk tale.
Right. There's some qualities of that too. And at the end, it's like, is there like a moral to, like, it's not, it leaves you unsettled because they feel so carefully constructed, and then they just kind of end
dreamlike fables of angst about modernity and time. And this is great. I really appreciate being turned on to him. I also think the fascist sympathies and the monarchism and all that, that's always interesting and fun. We're gonna have to deal with that when we get around to David Bowie, which people really don't like to too much on, but it's still sort of there. Very cool. And what an interesting time for him to be alive. What year was he born again?
1914.
He was born right during the World War One.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. This is another case of how to make an artist. Super eccentric father, mother leaves when he's a teenager, has some amount of money, goes to one of these private boarding schools during the week. His role as a conservationist too, I think, is quite interesting.
He really threw himself into that. And when I started reading him, I mean, that's sort of in his Wikipedia page, and I didn't realize how deep it went, but he spent years. I mean, he spent a lot of his life. I mean, it was basically a full-time job plus for years and years. And, you know, more power to him. But yeah, it's a, Interesting role he played. One thing though, I did promise on the main episode about the After Dark was we were going to get a little bit more into the spooky stuff. So he, like I mentioned, he was a member of the Society for Psychical Research. And here's a quote from him that I really like. It's kind of, it gives me the good heebie-jeebies. There is evidence that a mystical clairvoyant faculty of a most practical kind is commonly taken for granted in many, quote, primitive societies, from pre-communist Tibet to the Hebrides. Is that how you say that one? Hebrides? I think so.
No clue.
And no is idea. Merely bred out and killed off by industrialism, compulsory education, and the belief that every question has an answer. So I like that. Now, he's part of this organization that goes all the way back to the 1838. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that organization, but I want to give you a little bit of taste of the kinds of things he did as a member of this. This one cracks me up. At some point, Aikman travels to the Isle of Man, which has the best flag of all the flags, if you've ever seen it.
What does the flag look like? Remind me. I like the Welsh flag. I like the dragon.
It's like a dude. It's like the head of a dude with like three legs. It's very strange.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, this is the Isle of Man is one of these weird. It's like a trivia question.
Yes. Yeah. It could be the Aikman flag if it wasn't already the Isle of Man flag. Yeah,
it's just jammed between the north of England and Ireland.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he traveled out there because there was a phenomena. There was a thing out there called Jeff the Talking Mongoose. Okay. So this was something that was like a bit of a tabloid press item. This would be in the early 1940s. So there's this family on the Isle of Man who claimed that they had a magical talking mongoose that lived in their cupboard. And instead of everybody just thinking it's completely dumb, some people were believers and would come out and try to see it and document it and listen to it. And most likely what was happening is the father was just a very talented ventriloquist, because nobody ever saw that. Well, two people claimed to see the mongoose, but I think it was one of those things that was like, yeah, I saw the UFO.
Oh, you know what I mean? Love this kind of flim-flammery, right? On Art of Darkness.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Human life is run through with flim-flammery.
Right. And so they would always show like, oh, here are the footprints. Oh, and here's some hair we found. Later they find out that somebody looks at it and it's clearly just the hair of their sheepdog. It's like the same color as their dog. It's like, mm-hmm. Doesn't make so it's clearly a bunch of malarkey, right? And but they carried this on for a long time. And you know, it got to the point that when the father died, they immediately tried to move, because the story is that the father was the ventriloquist, right? They had this story about they would go to the market and the mongoose would come with them chattering the whole time, but would be like in the hedges so you couldn't actually see it, and he was just throwing his voice. But Aikman went to investigate this, like he wanted to go see it, whereas you or I would just be like, yeah, that's obviously stupid. I mean, I'm not going to travel to the Isle of Man to go see Jeff the Talking Mongoose. So anyway, the John Irving, the patriarch of the house, he dies and they move. And the funny thing is they have to sell the house for a loss, because now the story is that it's haunted. It's got a talking mongoose. Nobody wants that house.
Oh, man. Right?
So they kind of shot themselves in the foot with this whole thing. Now, another thing that Aikman did was he investigated the Borley Rectory. The Borley Rectory was called by Harry Price the most haunted place in England. And it's a pretty interesting story. It's got, like, you know, people finding skulls in cupboards and bones in the basement. But then the president at the time of the Society for Psychical Research showed up to do an investigation, and all these new phenomena started happening. Like, stuff's flying off the walls. People are getting, you know, there's weird noises and things like that. And then at one point, this Harry Price guy, he gets confronted. One another person that he's investigating with gets hit in the head with a little pebble. And this person gets suspicious of Harry Price, kind of holds him against the wall, reaches into his pocket, and Harry Price has got all of these pebbles in his pockets, right? So he's clearly been staging this thing to make the Borley Rectory seem like a big deal. And he wrote a book about it and all of that.
So I've heard of the Borley Rectory.
Yeah.
I've heard of this.
I mean, it was thought to be for a long time. I think it might be destroyed now, or maybe they've destroyed and restored it. But it was the most haunted place in England.
You know? Ah, there was a fire in the rectory. A fiery. Yes. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, but this is what's funny. Harry Price, so he stages this, but he's also, he would out mediums and stuff like that at the same time. So it's very weird, like, what his exact perspective on all of this stuff was. But I started getting like, well, okay, what is the Society for Psychical Research? It still exists. It's existed since 1862, something in 140 years. But I got looking at it, listen to this, some of the presidents of the Society for Psychical Research. Well, before we get to the presidents, one member was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who actually ended up leaving because he was such an intense spiritualist that he didn't like a hint of skepticism about spiritualism. That's capital S spiritualism. But some other people that were presidents of the Society for Psychical Research. Henri Bergson was the president in 1913, the philosopher who would go on to win the Nobel Prize in Literature. The philosopher Schiller was the president in 1914. Sir Oliver Lodge, who basically invented the radio, was the president. Arthur James Balfour, who would later become the prime minister, was the president of the Society for Psychical Research. William Boyd Carpenter, who was at the same time the chaplain to Queen Victoria, was once the president. And another president was William James, the well-known William James, who wrote The Varieties of Religious Experience. So it's like, what are all these like heavies doing running this cuckoo clock organization? It's very unusual. Like, I do wonder if there are some sort of conspiracy theories associated with this organization. It's almost like a secret society of people. And now it still exists. And I took a look at their current output. They have an interesting, I have to put this back in. They have a thing they do still called the Psy Encyclopedia. And let's just look, I'm just going to share a couple things from the Psy Encyclopedia with you real quick. So anybody can go to this, just search PSI Encyclopedia. And here are some of the articles that are on there as of today.
Oh, fun.
Clinical parapsychology, therapeutic approach that aims to provide practical help in counseling context for people who are disturbed by anomalous events. So if you have a haunting, you can go and get a clinical parapsychologist and they can help you deal with the fact that you're being haunted.
Who are you going to call?
Yeah.
Art of darkness.
They have an article on a woman named Olga Call, who is a Russian psychic investigated in the late 1920s, for her ability to cause words and images that she received telepathically from other people to appear briefly on her skin as red marks. There's an article on Gansfield ESP where it says the Gansfield method has proved an effective way to demonstrate ESP in the laboratory. It's a system for how you set up telepathic connections, apparently. There's an article on twin telepathy, which I think everybody is familiar with anecdotally, this idea that twins have some sort of, you know, subtle communication.
I like to think that we're podcast twins.
Yeah.
Sometimes I scratch my nose and I know you're thinking about the next episode and
right.
how long it's going to be.
That's right. There's a detailed article on remote viewing. There's a detailed article on something called the Glastonbury scripts, which are some texts that were obtained in 1907 that were texts communicated through a medium that seems to have been the deceased former monks of the Glastonbury Abbey.
And you know, what we're getting close to with all of this business is... Da, 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 da,
Mr. Crowley, did you talk to the dead? Mr. Crowley.
Yeah, we're getting so close to, dude, at some point, I think this year we're going to do Crowley.
Why not? Halloween. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Incredible. No, we got to do it for Crowleymas.
When is Crowleymas?
My daughter's birthday, October 12th.
Okay.
The great beast 666 reincarnated in my teenage daughter.
Ah.
Not really.
Well, but good luck with that.
They do. Hide the farm animals. They do share a birthday, though. Crowley.
Oh, that's interesting.
I never forget it. It's October 12th.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Well, what do we have coming up next?
Wow, that'd be a good thing to talk about for our beloved Patreon subscribers.
And everybody who does subscribe, thank you so much. It's fantastic. It's unbelievable that people are willing to do it, and we want to keep trying to give you what you guys came to us for. That's our
genuinely goal, so. Grateful. This show is interesting because it's not necessarily the most consistent, right? We don't do two episodes a week. We don't, we do it on a schedule that kind of works for us, but we do put the work in and the time in, and hopefully you're finding that it's valuable.
Hey, it's five episodes in the month of May.
Hey, all right. That's all right. But yeah. Let me look at the calendar here. Let me look at AOD. Let's see. What do we have coming up? We do have Hieronymus Bosch in June, and that's you.
That might get pushed, but yes.
Okay, that's fine. We are expecting a child to arrive in June.
Yeah, so June might be
a little quiet. We'll see how we feel. Maybe you and I will just do a pickup episode and sort of talk about the first half of the year.
Sure.
And then we have the great mad Antonin Artaud with Adam Lehrer, which is going to be a banger.
That will be a banger.
Yeah, Antonin Artaud. And then we've got PKD with Aldous Asterion.
That'd be great.
And we've got a dark room AOD with it looks like Bernays and PKD. Who's coming on that?
Rap game Bernays.
Oh yeah, Rap Game Bernays. Okay, of course. Right. Yep. I was going Bernays and PKD, because we're gonna have to do Bernays at some point. He's a very funny account. Then we're gonna do Francis Bacon, the artist with Blauergeist. Terrence McKenna, Hildegard Bingen.
Yeah.
Norm Macdonald. And of course, I've got to get, it looks like I don't have Crowley booked yet. So
I got to share with you, because one that's coming up the soonest is this Saturday. We are doing our Dark Room episode on Gurdjieff with the great James Ellis of the Hermetics podcast.
Oh, yes. Is that in my calendar or am I? No, it is.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I just did a search for AOD and it wasn't in there, but that's going to be a great, we will talk about how man is food for the moon. We will toast the idiots, which we are. Mm-hmm. And, I think we just got a lot of exciting stuff coming up. That reminds me that I want to reach out to, oh my God, her name's escaping me right now. We're going to do Crowley with,
Stephanie.
Stephanie, of course. Yeah, Stephanie. I'm so used to all these anon names.
Yes, like, I know, right? When you have like a name like John Smith, you're like, wait,
the
what?
Great Ooh. Stephanie Leahy. So let me, I'm just going to send her a message.
Who is
right
interestingly
now.
Friend of the show since before the show.
Oh, yeah. She's a righteous old school friend of the show. Yeah, from the previous podcast where we cut our teeth to figure out what not to do for years in order to birth Art of Darkness. As just pure gold from day one, this show. Yeah. There's been nothing has gone wrong, nothing amiss.
No.
And you're lucky to be a part of it, people.
I didn't even mispronounce a word.
No, right. Yeah. Wagner, Max. Wagner. All right. Brad, this is great, man. I really enjoyed it. Let's kill this. I gotta go. I'm gonna go have dinner. But always work on this, and I'm gonna put on a Robert Aikman short story. I'm gonna find it on YouTube.
I tweeted one today. That's a good one. Sweet. So hit it up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Be good.
Peace.
Bye-bye. Bye.